From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Pablo Arauz Peña with your state and local news update. The Southeast Alaska State Fair will go on as planned this coming weekend. As KHNS's Mike Swayze reports, fair organizers are taking steps to ensure the safest gathering possible, even as COVID-19 cases spike across Southeast Alaska.
Last year, there was no fair due to the pandemic. This year, the fair is back, but COVID mitigation is a top priority. One of the fair organizers, Maddie Wittick, says she's excited about a fun yet safe event.
The beauty of the Southeast Alaska State Fair is almost all of it happens outside. The CDC is recommending if you're going to hold an event, have it be outside. So that's really in our favor.
But there are a number of activities that won't be on the schedule this year as part of the mitigation plan.
So there won't be a bounce house, and we won't have the joust, which is the inflatable kind of warrior knock people off of a pedestal thing.
The Southeast Alaska State Fair typically draws hundreds of people from communities like Whitehorse and Canada's Yukon Territory, Juneau, Sitka, Skagway, and Haines. The event features music shows, vendors, and a slew of activities and games for all ages. There will be some changes. No live music or beer sold at the Klondike stage this year. But there still will be a horseshoe tournament.
There will not be alcohol for sale with the horseshoes, which I know is a disappointment for some.
One of the biggest changes fairgoers will see is the sign-in sheet at the entrance to track attendees.
That's really the only way that we are able to keep track of who is attending. And in the very, what we feel, unlikely event of any outbreak and the need to do contact tracing, that's how we're going to be able to do it.
Another big change will be the shorter hours.
We will not be having a late night program. We will be wrapping up for the evening at around 8 or 9 o'clock, depending on the day. You know, people hang out in the beer garden later and the late night music. Everybody kind of comes together to dance. Part of our COVID mitigation strategy is to avoid that.
Organizers will make free masks available at the entrance. There will be hand washing and sanitizing stations located throughout, and social distancing is encouraged. There is a long schedule of events available at seakfair.org, culminating in headlining acts like Diggin' Dirt, a funk band out of California, on Friday night. And the Lack family on Saturday. The final event of the weekend will be a free-for-all pie fight at 3:30 Sunday afternoon.
We have a lot of whipped cream and Dream Whip, and we are making whipped cream pies, and it's a no-rules pie fight.
Transportation options include the Alaska Marine Highway System, Alaska Fjord Lines, the Haines-Skagway Fast Ferry, and there are options from Alaska Seaplanes. For KHNS News, I'm Mike Swayze.
In other news, as the U.S. nears President Joe Biden's August deadline to withdraw troops from Afghanistan, it's clear that the politics and logistics of getting everyone out of there are complicated and shifting all over the country. Former Juneau resident Heather Barr is keeping an eye on the region. She's living in Pakistan now, working for Human Rights Watch. KTOO's Lindsay Brolini caught up with Barr during a brief visit back to town to find out more about the region.
So what is the kind of work that you do at the Human Rights Watch?
So we document human rights abuses and try to advocate for an end to human rights abuses. I moved over to the Women's Rights Division about 7 years ago. And since then, I've been working on lots of different issues, including girls' access to education, child marriage. I looked at human trafficking. Our approach is always to collect evidence about what's actually happening on the ground and then use that evidence to try and make governments or international organizations like the UN or companies stop whatever abuses are going on.
How did you get involved in human rights?
I don't know. I got really into punk rock music when I was a teenager in Juneau still. It was really hard to buy albums back then, but you could order them through the mail. And I started reading magazines about music, but also about politics. And so that made me think about things in some different ways. And then when I first got to New York, the first full-time job I had was working in the shelter for homeless women. After working there for a while, I was less interested in trying to change the clients and more interested in trying to change the way the government worked and how it was behaving, in the sense that it was making it impossible for the women I worked with to get housing and to get health care and to get drug treatment and to get public benefit and so on. So I guess that's how I got interested in human rights.
Wow. That's I love that it started with like punk rock and magazines and stuff. Yeah. How is the situation like in Afghanistan, you know, with the U.S. military leaving, how is that impacting like the human rights there?
So the last 2 months have been a disaster, honestly, since President Biden announced that the U.S. was withdrawing unconditionally. The Taliban have really gone on the offensive and tried to take over as many areas of the country as they can. It's been really clear from the way they've behaved in those areas that they haven't changed at all since 2001. So everything you read about before 2001 about how they treated women, not allowing women out of the house without a male family member escorting them, not allowing women and girls to go to school, not allowing women to work, all of that is happening again. That doesn't mean that the U.S. military should have stayed forever, or even that the U.S. military should have stayed longer. But I think the way that the U.S. government has behaved is sort of as if they don't really care what happens. They didn't really do any planning or think very much about, you know, what the immediate consequences would be or what the long-term consequences would be or what this would mean for women's rights. And so I found that really frustrating.
What would you say to people who think that, you know, this issue doesn't really affect them too much because Afghanistan is such a faraway place?
Well, you know, we pay taxes, we vote. So when our government invades another country, drops bombs on another country, that's our decision too. You know, we paid for that invasion, we paid for those bombs, we elected those politicians. So it's not that far away in a way. And one of the things that really gets me is that it's been 20 years since the Taliban were pushed out of power. And in those 20 years, a whole generation of young women and girls have grown up thinking that they were going to have freedom and be able to study and be able to work and walk down the street if they wanted to, and thinking that, you know, this dark time during the Taliban period was a sad story that they heard from their mother and from their grandmother that would never happen again. And now it's happening again. And it's our actions as Americans that, you know, created this sequence of events. And I don't see how we can feel like what's happening to those girls and young women is nothing to do with us.
What do you wish that people here knew about the war, the U.S. involvement, how that impacts the region and the world?
I think when you picture a war on the other side of the world, it's easy to not really imagine humans there. You know, you just imagine bombs falling all the time and things blowing up. But there are also people who are trying to feed their families, or, you know, who have a big exam that they're studying for, or who applied for a job and are waiting to find out whether they got it or not. The way that families are trying to live in Afghanistan is actually not that different from how families are trying to live in Juneau or anywhere else in the U.S. We need to have compassion for those families the same as we would for the one across the road, you know?
Yeah. Thanks so much for taking time to talk to me.
All right. Well, yeah, good to meet you. And thanks again for inviting me to talk to you.
That was KTOO's Lindsay Berlini talking to former Junoite Heather Barr about her time in Afghanistan. In another news, a lone killer whale that was reported to have beached itself on Prince of Wales Island Thursday has freed itself, according to federal biologists. NOAA Fisheries spokesperson Julie Fair says the killer whale was able to refloat with the incoming tide and left the area not long ago, around 3 p.m.
Reports from the scene indicate that the whale was a little bit slow at first and meandered around a little bit, and then swam away.
Video on social media showed people standing around the roughly 20-foot-long marine mammal as it lay on seaweed-covered rocks with several boats nearby. The orca was reported to be calling out as Good Samaritans tried to keep the whale wet. Fair says biologists are gathering photos and videos of the whale.
We're trying to determine if it was a known killer whale. If so, what pod it was from, and to assess its condition and any injuries it might have. And knowing that will just help us further our scientific understanding of killer whales.
Though other killer whales were initially reported in the area, Fair says they swam away before the whale was able to free itself. Fair says NOAA has no evidence the stranding was related to Wednesday's magnitude 8.2 earthquake that triggered tsunami warnings and advisories along much of Alaska's coast. For more on this and other news stories, you can go to KTOO.org. This is KTOO News.